And here we are for another Thursday night with Dr. James Chappelle. My name is Chuck Dewey, one of the co-owners of the Whole Wellness Club. And Dr. Jim has an exciting topic for us tonight. I commented to him, so we're going to sing the body electric. I'm sure the field will actually be a little narrower than that. We could probably talk about the electrical nature of the body for many calls, Jim, but I know there's a few things that struck your fancy today, and you really know that we haven't discussed it, and it's foundational to how the body works.
Well, that's what, you know, you always call me 5, 10, or 15 minutes before we're supposed to be on this, and you always say, well, what are we going to talk about? That's how prepared we are. When you talk about a fireside chat, this is definitely that.
You've had 38 years to prepare, so I'm not too worried about someone knowing what they're talking about here.
Yeah, well, so the thing is that I just got to thinking, because I'm writing another book, and I want to go into a little more detail on this subject about electrons, or specifically voltage, and also frequencies. But I don't want it to be too complicated. In my book, I'm going to try to explain it a little clearer. It's easier to explain it in a written form as opposed to talking about it. But because I'm reflecting on this voltage and on frequencies and on energy and all of this, I thought this could be an interesting discussion tonight. So the bottom line is this, is that you have a minus millivolts that can be registered in the body. Excuse me. You also have positive millivolts. You had this in water as well. We use a oxygen reduction potential meter, or an ORP meter, to register either a positive or negative charge in millivolts relative to fluids, or specifically water in this case. And you can do the same thing with the human body. So you can register this electrical current in the body. And here's what we found. If you want optimum health and longevity, the average adult ranges in a minus 20 to a minus 25 millivolts. If you fall outside of that, you're going to have some abnormality. The body doesn't function too well let's just say, a minus 10. If you take, there are different meters and devices that can actually test this in the human body, and you can take a meter, let's say a biomodulator is one of them, and you can take this device and you can actually test different systems of the body to find out, are do you have a range of minus 20 to minus 25 if you're an adult. It's a minus 30 to a minus 35 millivolts in children and in athletes. So we know this. So you take the meter and someone says, yeah, I haven't been feeling too good for a while. You can scan the entire body. You can find out what system might be in excess or less than the ideal. And if it's a child, then let's say it's minus 30 to minus 35. Let's just say that it's 20 in this child. Well, there's supposed to be a minus 30 to a minus 35, and they're a minus 20. So something's not right. And with some of these meters and devices and equipment that's out there, they can pinpoint where the blockage is. They can pinpoint where the problem is in your electrical system. And you have to understand that this electrical system has to do with electrons. The millivolts have to do with electrons. There's also a frequency. Every tissue, organ, gland has a specific frequency or a range in frequency. As an example, there was a Dr. Stuart Wheelwright. And he passed away many years ago, but 50, 60 years ago, he said, you know, I understand that every tissue in the body has a frequency and a millivolt, and I want to graft out, I'm going to chart out every frequency of every tissue in the body. So he took samples of, I'll just give you one example. He took a sample of a human liver. He took some cells from a human liver, and he did the same thing with the liver of a cat and a dog and a chimpanzee and a shark. And he went and he tested dozens of animals, and he said the frequency of the liver, whether it's from a shark, a turtle, or a human, it's the same frequency. And the millivolts change, but specifically for humans, if you're an adult, it's a minus 20 to a minus 25. Now, here's the unique thing that he did. He took the frequency, and in this case we're talking about a liver, and he said, if the liver, and I'm going to make this up because I don't remember exactly, I know the brain has a frequency of 70 to 78 megahertz. The range is 70 to 78 for the brain. I don't remember what the liver is, but let's just say it's 50 to 55. He then said, all right, now what I want to do is I want to formulate products that have an affinity for the liver, healing products that target the liver. And what he did was he adjusted the frequency, the energetic signature of the product to match the organ or the tissue that he was trying to effectuate. You following me?
Yeah.
So we've known for a long time that every tissue, organ, gland, the bones, the muscles, everything has a range and a different frequency, but we know overall adults have this millivolts based on just a couple, minus 20 to minus 25 for adults, minus 30, minus 35 for children. So the key here is that when your millivolts are off, your frequency gets off. The gland, organ, tissue is out of balance. So when you take products like what you have in the Whole Wellness Club, the net result of remineralizing the body, of stabilizing and normalizing glucose, of giving the body the enzymes it needs to do what it needs to do, of detoxifying the body, the net result of this can be demonstrated in a balanced millivolt or energy signature, because that's what the goal should be. The body reaches optimum health and longevity when you have those frequencies and millivolt energies in the range that it's supposed to be in order to achieve optimum health and longevity. It boils down to voltage. It boils down to energy. It boils down to electrons. That's what it's really, that's the core essence of what's really going on.
You know, I could add one more thing to this, Jim, and it partially is based on our conversation. What was it, 8 minutes before the call?
Yeah.
There is a definite coefficient of correlation between this measure of negative millivolts and your frequency that you're talking about, but between that and the actual pH measure.
That's right.
Depending on which tissue you're talking about, if you're in the pancreas, you know, your pH should be around 8 or something like that. And so I imagine the frequency should be different there and the negative millivolts should be different there.
Well, the negative millivolts, let's just take the pancreas. If the pH in the pancreas is, let's say, 8.5, I don't remember exactly, but let's just say that's what it is. The millivolts in an adult pancreas can range from a minus 20 to a minus 25. So it could be minus 20, minus 21, minus 22. As long as it's in that range, you're in the optimum range. The frequency doesn't change. I mean, there is a range, but it may even be tighter relative to the frequency and relative to optimum health and longevity. Specifically, we're talking about the pancreas. The goal is that your pH is. I told you earlier that if you have the pH scale is 0 to 14, 0 being as acid as it can get, 14 being as alkaline as it can get, 7 is in the middle. That's neutral. When you're at a 0 pH, your millivolts won't be negative. They'll be a positive 400. And when you're a 14, which is way alkaline, there'll be a minus 400. So when you're on the alkaline side of that 7 being neutral, when you're on the alkaline side, you're going to be in the negative millivolt side. You're going to have more electrons moving. You're going to have more electricity, more voltage, more energy. That's on the alkaline side. And when you're on the acid side, you're on the positive millivolts. You're going to have less electrons, more protons, less energy, more acid. It's that simple. So there's another reason when you think about it this way. I mean, we already know that when you're on the alkaline side, even though we have different pHs throughout the body, overall the body should be on the alkaline side. And when you're on the alkaline side, you've got a negative ionic charge. You've got that the minus millivolts. And when you're on the alkaline side, you have increased oxygen saturation. So we need alkalinity because we need the oxygen and we need the electrons. Those electrons help to neutralize these free radicals. Free radicals are on the positive side, and the electrons neutralize them. An antioxidant is on that negative side. An oxidant is on the positive side. So if you look at your body and you say, okay, now I understand. You want a negative millivolts, and if you're an adult, you're looking at minus 20 to minus 25. You want a body like that, and you want the frequency of that organ or gland or tissue to be within its ideal range. And that's what good nutrition is. I was writing an outline, and I said the human body requires nutrition for survival, but it requires good nutrition to thrive. And when you start breaking down fats and proteins and carbohydrates, then you say, what do those things represent? They represent vitamins and minerals and enzymes and glyconutrients and essential fatty acids and antioxidants and polyphenols, and all these things are within those fats and proteins and carbohydrates. But what's inside of those nutrients, or what are those nutrients actually, what is the core effect of proper nutrition or ideal nutrition? It's going to boil down to energy, voltage, millivolts. That's how it really gets down that deep. So now you're looking at, all right, I'm going to hydrate the body. I'm going to supplement the body. I'm going to eat good food. Why are you doing this? Because the body will take those nutrients and it'll create energy. It creates this voltage. It repairs and heals these voltages that are out of balance. And oftentimes, you know, I was telling you earlier, Chuck, that there are three pathways that the body uses to, and I'll just call it, electrify itself. One is fibrous tissue. This is the connective tissue throughout the body, especially around muscle. The fibrous tissue has a low resistance to electrons, so the electrons travel through fibrous tissue easily. And the fibrous tissue that's going throughout the body, it has pathways of least resistance, and when we trace these pathways, this is what the Chinese have known for over 5,000 years, and they call them meridians. They tie right in with the acupuncture meridians. And what happens when you put a needle into one of those meridians? It's all about electricity. It's all about energy. This is what they're talking about. How do you you go to an acupuncturist and you have a liver problem, and he finds that there's meridians now at the bottom of your feet and your hands and your ear, maybe the back of your neck. And they're putting these needles in there, and you're saying to this doctor, well, wait a minute, it's my liver. My liver's over here. Why are you doing this? Because that's how they influence the chi, the energy, the electrons through this fibrous tissue network that they call meridians. And when they do that properly, the energy comes back into the liver and the liver starts working again. The second pathway is your nervous system. You've got this fibrous kind of tissue encapsulating the nervous system. So that's where chiropractic has always come in. Matter of fact, before it was chiropractic in the United States, it was called bone setting in England. You know, 15, 1600s, they were called bone setters. But it's really not the bones that we're dealing with. You're dealing with the nervous system. You're using the articulations of the body to influence the nervous system. That's why I say in the Hans Tech syndrome, we're talking about the loss of nerve conductivity. You have to look at that, and that's within the spine. Well, that's another way that electrons and energy and these millivolts and the frequency balancing, there's another pathway there. That's through the nervous system, not through the meridians and fibrous tissue relative to acupuncture, but through the nervous system, same pathway. And the third pathway is through the blood. The blood moves electrons, but it only does it if you have the right, I'll just call it ionic minerals. If you have the right conductivity within the blood. You know how if you have distilled water and you drop electrodes in there and put a light bulb connected to it, the light bulb won't come on because the distilled water is just pure H2O. But you throw some electrolytic minerals in there, now it conducts electricity and now the light bulb comes on. Same thing in the blood. So you have to have the nutrients in the blood. You have to have the ionic minerals in the blood. This is part of Coral Complex 3 here. When you have the blood the way it's supposed to be, and it has to be hydrated, the viscosity of the blood has to be just right. You don't want it too thin. You don't want it too thick. You have to hydrate the body. So now you have the blood moving electrons, you have the nervous system moving electrons, and you have these meridians moving electrons. And between the three of them, if you're doing it right, every tissue, gland, and organ of the body will have the right frequency to work properly, and you'll have the right millivolts, which should be for an adult minus 20 to minus 25, and for children and adults, athletes, it's minus 30 to minus 35. That's how simple it is.
Well, I think about nutritional products. You know, you say good nutrition can affect the electrical nature of your body, and I know for years I was a distributor for a company where we sold whole food products, and I would actually, you know, test whole food product by sending it to a friend of mine who would measure the amount of millivolts coming off that food while it's dying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has an electrical nature if it's alive.
That's
and
right.
Perhaps, you know, we often talk about, we use terms like a bioavailability, assimilability, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what we're really talking about, couched in electrical terms, is how that nutritional product, whether it's a Coral Complex 3 or Cinnamon 6 or any nutritional product, the enzymes that we have, it may be the way that it interfaces with the body's electrical nature.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm talking about here. That you have and here's the neat thing, everything has a signature. You know, as an example, we've known forever that and we didn't know why many years ago, but now we do. We knew that if somebody has some kind of a brain dysfunction or abnormality or some kind of a challenge or a problem, it could be just headaches. It could be cancer. It's just something to do with the brain somehow. Well, we know now that the brain has a range of 70 to 78 megahertz. That's the frequency. And we know that the millivolts is a minus 20 to minus 25 in an adult. Well, forever, we've known that peppermint has some effect with the brain. You can drink peppermint tea. You can take an essential oil, put it in the base of the brain, rub it around, you put it on your forehead. Well, we just knew many, many years ago, boy, if you take peppermint, it tends to help people with brain challenges. Well, now we found out that the frequency of peppermint is 78 megahertz. It's right within that 70 to 78 megahertz that the brain is. And so it is for herbs and food and everything. Everything's got a signature, it's got a frequency, it has an energy to it, and it's just amazing that we're discovering this now, but animals have known it forever. This is where Harry Hoxie's grandfather said, when I let my first cow out of the confines of the corral because it was dying of cancer, and I just let it out, and I just released it to the wilderness to die out there because he didn't want to kill it. And it went out, and it was gone for 2 or 3 weeks, and he figured, okay, it's dead out there someplace. And then it came back, and it was totally cancer-free. This is how the story goes, at least. Well, the next sick animal that he let go, he followed him, and he watched these animals pick and choose certain plants, certain herbs, and they would eat some of them on the sunny side and some of them on the shadow side and some of them in the morning and some of them in the evening. These animals know that when the sun comes out, there's certain energy, certain volatile oils that pull up into the leaves. And when the sun goes down, then they'll go down maybe into the roots. Some of them, depending on the season and the month, and all of these things play a part, and these animals inherently just know that if I take this and take that and take this. So what happened was Harry Hoxie's grandfather went out and harvested those plants and those herbs, and he tinctured them, and he started using them on animals right there on his farm. They didn't have to go out into the wilderness. He provided it for the animals right there, and then he started using them for humans and found that it had the same effect. And now we've come back and said, it's kind of interesting. This herb has a propensity because of the frequency to heal and repair the liver. And one of those herbs is milk thistle. Another one is dandelion root. Oh, these herbs are really good for the lungs. One of them's lobelia, the other one's fenugreek. Frequencies are matching the tissue. It's just amazing. So I thought it would be nice for people to at least think about how when we're talking about eating non-toxic food, when we're talking about, didn't we talk one time, Chuck, on one of these conference calls about the electromagnetic radiation coming off of outlets in the wall on the left and right side of your bed in the bedroom?
If it came up, Jim, it was only a brief part. It wasn't necessarily germane to the main topic. I don't recall, actually. Oh.
Well, this is part of the same thing. You know, they have meters. You can buy these little meters even at Radio Shack, and you can go into your room and say, okay, I'm just going to lie down in bed here and turn on the meter and see where it goes relative to the electromagnetic radiation that's all. I mean, you know, when you think about a house, you're looking at your walls, but, I mean, every wall is just strung with electrical wires and outlets in every room, and then they go up the wall and into the ceiling and into the attic, and you're basically in a network of swirling electricity. And so, especially when you're sleeping, you don't want to be in a cocoon of electromagnetic radiation for 8 hours while you're sleeping. And typically, we take our bed, we put it up against the wall. There's an outlet on the left side of the bed, an outlet on the right side, and most people have metal frames for their bed. So you put that metal frame up against the bed, the wall, and the electricity coming through those lines swirls, it travels right into the metal frame. And then what do you have in a mattress? Typically, you've got metal springs in there. So the electromagnetic radiation just goes right into the springs, and it just goes right into you all night long. It's not healthy. It changes frequencies. It changes millivolts. It alters things. So we know that if you want optimum health and longevity, you at least need to be aware of this and then maybe do something about it. You don't want to have your electric radio within 3 feet of your head as you're sleeping there and the radio's on your nightstand, and then you have your lamp and that's plugged in. Well, wait a minute, we turn the lights off, you know, that should do something. No. That electricity is swirling all night long. Now, what do you do about that? Well, you can do something really simple. I got rid of my metal frame, and I just bought a wooden frame. They sell them. I got rid of the mattress. I have a mattress with no metal springs. It's 100% organic rubber. You can get a rubber mattress, and it's unbelievable to sleep on. You can keep what you already have. Just get the box spring has, you know, all the springs, so just get a little a piece of plywood and put it in between the box spring and your mattress, and then they make shields. You can get these electromagnetic film, a shield, and you lay that on the plywood, and then you just find a way of running the grounding wire out of your bedroom through a window and into the ground. And then that'll knock back 90% or more of the electromagnetic radiation. The point is that if we're aware that we're living in an ocean of electromagnetic radiation, that it affects the frequencies of tissues, organs, glands of the body, that it changes the millivolts, that remember how I say this all the time, Chuck, stop doing the things that are making you sick and start doing things that will help you get well. Helping you get well to bring frequency and energy back into the body, it has to do with your nutrition and your food supplements. But to stop the bad guys, you need to understand that you really don't want to bombard your body with electromagnetic radiation, so you need to find ways of, they've got for computer screens, something that you put in front, attaches to the front of your computer that blocks out the electromagnetic radiation. So, but this all has to do with energy. So when people say, oh man, I wake up and I just feel drained. Well, it could be nutrition. It could be tissue hypoxia. It could be a bunch of things. But one thing that we haven't talked about is it also could have something to do with these frequencies and the ideal negative millivolts.
This is this is really something unexpected for me. I've not totally explored the electrical nature of the body, and I'm sure there's more we can do with this, Jim.
Well, absolutely. I think this gets really, you know, it gets really heavy. I mean, you kind of have to see it as, how well does your car run on a 12-volt battery? Well, it runs pretty good. It's designed for that. Okay, take the 12-volt battery out of your car and put a 6-volt battery in there and see how well the car runs. It doesn't run very well. It's matched for 12 volts. The human body's the same way. You know, if your brain needs a minus 20 millivolts, what happens when you have a minus 10? It goes from brain fog, confusion, to absolute coma. If your brain, if the energy, if the millivolts aren't matched, aren't correct, the body will react. And they can go from, well, little Johnny seems kind of confused. Oh, gosh, Linda, she actually has a term. I think the doctor even said it's brain fog. Wow, what the heck is that? And Bill over here, I don't know what happened to him, but they found him in the garage, and he was just unconscious, and he's in a coma in the hospital. The common denominator can easily be the mismatching of the millivolts that the brain requires. So what do you do about that? Remember, I said there's three pathways. So and I've had plenty of patients that have had brain fog and confusion and issues like that. And part of the protocol is what we want to do is we want to analyze nerve conductivity. So I'm going to send you to a chiropractor and have him check out your spine and your nerve flow. In addition to that, I'm going to send you to an acupuncturist and have them check you out there as well. And they have devices that can scan the body. And they'll just say, all right, well, right here in this area, you're registering X on the scale. and then they not only determine where the blockage is or where the deficiency is, then the same device can charge. You know, when I have acupuncture, they use charging devices, a little alligator clips that are clipped onto the needle, go into a device like what is called a, typically they call them a transcutaneous electrical neural stimulator or a TENS pack, but they also have other devices that send signals. So it's like I fell off a three-story building many years ago, and so I have a weakness in my mid back and my neck. If I pick up something that's a little too heavy, I can feel it, and then I'll get pain in there because I just have this weakness in there. So I go to the acupuncturist, and he puts needles in there, and my neck is hurting so much I can barely turn it to the left or right because I'm in spasm. And he puts the little electrical device on there, and he sends a signal in, and he reestablishes the proper frequency and millivolts. And within 20 to 30 minutes, he takes out the device, takes out the needles, and my neck feels as if I never had a problem. Because when you put the energy back in there, see, the loss of this and the imbalance of this energy we're talking about, frequencies and the voltage, it ties to pain. When you have pain in the body, you have inflammation. When you have pain in the body, you have an imbalance relative to frequency and voltage. Get the frequency and voltage back in there. Get rid of the inflammation. The pain goes away. It's cause and effect, and it's almost instant. But you have to do the whole thing, you understand? So this is just something that we've never talked about. I thought it would be interesting to at least bring it up and have people think.
It is interesting, and I think it could be a whole field of study, even in, you know, trying to design a product, if you will, that maybe targets a certain area of the body and has the proper frequency.
Well, it's been it's out there. I mean, we've got devices and we have products, and I've created some myself, and it has to do just with this. And one of the easiest things to imprint in these frequencies is water. You can just take any kind of water, and you can create that as a transporter. But I've done it with other things. I did it with wine. I was part of a group that they had the instruments and the devices, and we said, okay, let's start imprinting wine, and let's have it have an affinity for different parts of the body. It's fascinating to me. You know, it's just all part of the miracle and majesty of being a human and how we really function. But we can see. You know, I had I'll just call it a discussion. It really was more of a debate that leaned almost into an argument. But it was with an oncologist in New Zealand today. Because I have a patient in New Zealand that has bone cancer. And so the oncologist got on and basically it was only radiation and only chemotherapy and only surgery can ever cure the body of cancer. And this guy's a strong orthodox medical doctor. And I always at least attempt to be friendly and open and nice, and I like to conduct myself that way. But sometimes I get a little short-tempered, especially when I hear things that just drive me up the wall. But anyway, so I just said, well, I understand, doctor. That's your orthodox medical training. I said, but let me just ask you one question. Would you say that cancer has anything to do with the suppressed immune system? And he said, yes, it does. I said, great. So would you say that if you have amalgams in your mouth that are vaporizing mercury, a toxic metal, and that toxic metal suppresses your immune system, by giving the patient chemotherapy, radiation, and cutting out whatever you're going to cut out, you didn't get to the cause of the problem that's suppressing the immune system unless you addressed the amalgams in the mouth? Is that correct? And he just went silent. And he said, there's no scientific proof. I said, no, there's plenty of scientific proof of what I'm saying. You're just not aware of it. because you're kind of into your field of radiation, chemotherapy, and surgery. Anyway, so we went on for a half hour, and we got to not really yelling at each other, but I'd just say being somewhat assertive and aggressive. And then finally, something clicked in him. He just got it. You know, Chuck, how you're a little boy and your father, your mother, somebody puts you on a bicycle for the first time and you have training wheels and you're flopping all around. Then all of a sudden you're starting to get this law of balance and they think that it's good enough and they take the training wheels off and you're really flopping around and maybe you fall a time or two and then all of a sudden the law of balance kicks in. And you're riding a bicycle, and within 2 weeks, you're going down the road with your hands off of the handlebars. I mean, you got it. And I've even, when I was a kid, we used to stand up on the seat, you know, ride down the street and then jump up on the seat and show how well-balanced we were. Well, 1 minute, you were falling all over, and the next minute, you got it. And that's what happened to this guy today. He was arguing and belligerent, and all of a sudden it clicked and he said, can you send me more information about this? Can you teach me? Can you lead me into what you know? This is starting to make sense to me. Well, that's how the body works relative to frequencies. The frequency is out of balance, the millivolts are out of balance, and you're just feeling terrible, and all of a sudden you stop doing the things that are contributing to all this, and you start doing things that are beneficial for you, including eating non-toxic food and drinking pristine water and supplementing your diet when you know you're not getting those nutrients in the food anyway, and then all of a sudden that electrical charge comes back. And when it does, you wake up and say, wow, I don't think I've ever felt this good. Well, it's not really a mystery. It's cause and effect. This is how the body works. And yet, it doesn't work this way if you don't get to the cause. In other words, just like what I'm telling you with this doctor, cutting out a tumor, radiating the body, chemotherapy throughout, that didn't do anything for a parasitic infection or a fungal infection or a mercury contamination or any other kind of contamination. That didn't do anything for a dehydrated body that has tissue hypoxia, totally out of balance with loss of nerve conductivity. All the things that contribute to cancer, that didn't do anything for that. It didn't help the millivolts or the frequency, had nothing to do with it. It just is kind of going after the tip of the iceberg. This guy, for the first time in his career, he got to look under the water, and he saw the majority of the iceberg, and he said, oh my gosh, can you teach me? Now that's where we want to go. We want the Orthodox medical doctors to at least open up to the possibilities, and we want people listening to these conference calls every week to open up to the possibilities that, hey, this body really can't. You get to the cause of your problem, and you'll find a cure.
Yeah, I know, Jim. In fact, I had an image in my mind of a kid putting his finger in a hole in the dike, you know, and there's more leaks coming, and you know, it'd be like building other small dikes and dams just to deal with the water that's coming from the dike instead of actually trying to repair the dike.
Well, that's how simple it is. You know, we really just need to see a different angle. If you just look at it from a little different angle, and then all of a sudden you see different images, you see different things. And we kind of have a one-way system, you know, but pretty much, I mean, everybody born and raised in the United States, I mean, typically, nowadays, you're born in a hospital. But 100 years ago, that wasn't the case. So you're born in a hospital and you're assigned a doctor. This is your pediatrician. Of course, you're not told that. I mean, you're just a day old. But the parents know. This is the pediatrician, this is your OBGYN, this is that, and this is what you do. And on day one, you're going to get these vaccinations, and a month later, you're going to do this and do that. And I told you on one of these conference calls, I was 5 years old. I never had any problems with my tonsils. I don't know why, but I never did. I mean, I didn't grow up eating health food at my mom's house. You know what happened to my mom. So we ate the same kind of food, but for whatever reason, my tonsils were fine. But I'm 5 years old, and I got a little birthday card from, I guess, my pediatrician. And my mom said, "Oh, Jimmy, you got a birthday card from Dr. whoever he was." "Oh, what was it say?" "Well, he wants to see you." Well, he wanted to see me because they were taking my tonsils out. So I go to the hospital, and they, I got a stuffed a monkey from that, and I got a big bowl of ice cream, but they just ripped my tonsils out as if I didn't need them. I never had a problem with them. But guess what? If you do have, people are listening tonight, and they have children, let's say, or grandchildren, and they have a problem with their tonsils. Is the answer taking out the blinking red light on your dashboard indicating that you've run out of oil? Is that the answer? Just take the red light out? Is the answer taking out your tonsils? Or is the answer, why are my tonsils swollen and irritated and infected? Could it have something to do with my diet and my lifestyle? Could it have something to do with sugar? Because sugar is the number one thing that throws stuff out of balance, including allowing the proliferation of pathogenic organisms. So instead of looking at the red blinking light on the dashboard and saying, wow, I'm out of oil. Maybe if I fill up the oil, the red light will go away. Instead of doing that, we just cut out the red light, and so when we take out the tonsils are basically part of the first line of defense to kill these pathogenic organisms as we're breathing them in. And you just took out the first line of defense. Now, guess what? Now you got to deal with the second line and the third line, and you're putting more pressure down the line because you just wiped out the first line. It's the same thing with having an injection. You know, the body knows how to deal with infections as they come in through the skin and through the sinuses and through the throat and any other way. But when you bypass all of the mechanisms and inject some toxin directly into the body, even IV it, hey, the body has a problem with that. That's a little unnatural. So we just need to understand how the body works, what we need to do to put it back into balance, and then watch these so-called signs and signals and symptoms of imbalances and toxicities and all these things just clear up. We call them diseases. They just clear up. Why? Because when you seek optimal health and longevity, where health resides, there's no room for illness. That's how the body works. And tonight, we just happen to be talking about energy, voltage, but this is basically what the body's all about.
Well, Jim, I think it's time we take on a few questions from our listeners. In order to accomplish that, I'd ask you to hit *2 on your telephone keypad. *2, and that will indicate you'd like to ask Dr. Jim a question. While you're doing that, I'm going to announce this evening's winner of the Cinnamon Six, and I'd like to remind each of you that our customer service people are actually waiting on call, and you can dial 866-549-0267. You can order Coral Complex 3 or Cinnamon Six. The enzymes that we have, peak enzymes with and without, and Dr. Miller's Holy Tea. Or they can help you with any setting in your back office. So there's a little customer service available to you tonight. And our winner, I'm a little confused because it might be a mother and daughter team. I'm actually going to unmute your line. It's either Faye or Teresa Book. And just a moment, I'm unmuting the line. Who won tonight? Was it Faye or Teresa? Can you speak to me? Go ahead. Don't be shy.
Faye, are you there on the line?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Well, then it's you. You're the winner, Faye, not Teresa. You're going to get a Cinnamon Six. I'll have that shipped out to you tomorrow morning. Okay?
Well, thank you very much.
Yep, that happens, everyone. On this call, there's always a random guest that wins a bottle of Cinnamon Six. Let me... And I see
Faye, I have
Andrew.
A question.
What? Yeah, you actually have a question. Okay, go ahead. Wait, one moment. I'm gonna just. That's right. You had your hand up for a question, and I wasn't aware that was going to happen. Go ahead. Ask Dr. Jim a question.
I'm sorry. This isn't Faye. This is on Faye's line.
Okay.
But can you give us a little bit of information about electric blankets?
Well, here we're talking about electricity, and we're talking about electromagnetic radiation, and we're talking about having this electric blanket. You know, you're sleeping on a bed with springs and a metal a frame leaning up against the wall with the outlets, and then you've got your electric blanket on top. So here, what you're doing is you're really encasing yourself in this electromagnetic radiation. Here's what I tell people to do. You can turn that electric blanket on to high, and whether that's 5 or 10 or 15, 20, 30 minutes before you go to bed, it doesn't make any difference. You just really get as warm as you want, and then you unplug it. Don't just turn it off, because you still got the wires all over you. You just pull the plug and you get into bed and it's nice and warm and you will fall asleep. Now, if you say, oh, but after 3 or 4 or 5 hours, it just gets too cold and I just have to have it turned on, then the alternative to that is you turn it on and it's spread throughout the bed there. It's on high. Now you're going to get into bed. You can turn it down a little bit, and you can roll the blanket down to where it's just covering your feet. You're still going to have some electromagnetic radiation associated with this, but at least it's not covering your internal organs. It's not over your heart and lungs and kidneys and all that. It is just at your feet. And warming the feet up oftentimes will be enough. You know, in the 70s, I came up with a product. It was really simple. All it was powdered cayenne pepper. But what we would do is we'd just take some of this cayenne pepper and sprinkle it into ski boots. And then you'd go skiing and you'd perspire a little bit, and then it would activate that cayenne and it would heat up your feet, and it kind of helped to keep the whole body warm by heating up the feet. You can do the same thing with electric blankets. So number one, if you can go without it, great. If you can't, you heat it up and pull the plug. If you can't go all night, then roll it down to the feet and keep your feet warm, and at least you won't be affecting the rest of your body. Okay?
Thank you. This is exactly what I tried to explain to a friend yesterday who had never heard of such a thing.
Mm.
And you just repeated everything almost exactly as I had stated yesterday.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to reaffirm it.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you. Our next caller is from Shawnee, Oklahoma, probably Toby. Go ahead, you're
yeah.
up.
Yeah. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Great.
I'm a construction worker. I'm working in this cold Arctic blast we're having here in Oklahoma. I'm going to try that cayenne pepper thing. But my question is, talking about the electromagnetic wiring and springs in your bed and everything,
mm-hmm.
could you do something as simple as just turn the circuit breaker off for your bedroom?
Yeah, you can turn off the circuit breaker for your bedroom, and that will have an effect relative to the wires or the lines connected to that circuit breaker. It depends on your house, I guess. If you have a raised floor, you may have wiring going underneath your bedroom to another room that you didn't turn the circuit breaker off, so you still got some of that going on the floor. If you're on a concrete slab, you might not have that within the slab, but you might have it up in the attic, crisscrossing, going to other rooms with other circuits. So here's the bottom line: if you become aware, if you're just aware of it, and you say, okay, this might make sense. And here's what I always tell people to do. I always have patients do this. It's real easy for someone that thinks that they know something to tell other people what they know as if they're an expert, and they want people to believe them. I tend to think that I know some things, but what I like to tell people is, don't just believe it because I said it. because I'm representing myself to be some kind of a knowledgeable person. Don't believe it just because I said it. Why don't you go out and do your own research, or even go out to prove me wrong? And in your research, you'll probably find that I'm right. But you won't believe it because I said it. You'll believe it because you found out on your own that I'm telling the truth. And here's what I'm saying. Just become aware that the body is this energetic system, that frequencies and voltage play a part of how the body works, whether it's sick or healthy, that our environment, electromagnetic radiation from televisions, from cell phones, from computers, from all the wiring in your house, could that play any part relative to someone not feeling well? And if it can, isn't it important then that we look at that part, the electromagnetic radiation? We look into it as a contributing factor to our ill health. Because if Mrs. Smith says, I've gone to every doctor in the world, I've got this problem, no one can find out what's wrong with me, then they come to someone like me. I'm kind of labeled as an intensivist. I'm dealing with intense conditions. And they come to somebody like me, and I say, okay, you've gone to every doctor, you've had every test, and they've looked into everything. Okay, well, did they look into toxic metals in your body? Well, I don't think so. Oh, okay. Did they do a stool sample for parasites? No, I'm not sure. I don't think I've had that done. Well, did you cough anything up, and did they check for coccidioidomycosis? Have you ever heard of that? It's something that can get into the lungs and throughout the body. Well, what is that? Well, it's a fungus. No, I've never been checked for fungus. And all of a sudden you find out that I've tried everything, and they really didn't. And then you get to electromagnetic radiation, and most people don't even have a clue. And most doctors don't even think about this. So all I want to do is bring awareness and say, all right, shut off the circuit breaker. Can that add to a benefit? I believe it can. Oh, maybe I'll put a shield in between my springs and my mattress. That's another benefit there. Well, I've got to use an electric blanket. Okay, well, then turn it off or roll it down to the feet. That's a benefit there. Well, I'm in front of a computer all day long. Good, put a screen on there and block off the electromagnetic radiation. Well, I'm on the cell phone. Don't put it up to your ear. Either get the air tube or put it on speakerphone and pull it away from you. Become aware of how this electromagnetic radiation affects frequencies and voltage in the body, and watch what happens to your health once you start doing something about it.
Now, is there a difference between electromagnets and permanent magnets as far as how our bodies respond to it?
Say that again.
Is there a difference between electromagnets and permanent natural magnets?
Oh, that's an excellent question, and I can't answer that. I don't know the answer to that question. Electromagnetic radiation as opposed to just a regular magnet. I know that there are magnets that are actually sewn into blankets, and they're using these magnets in a different way, and I think the magnet has to be a circle, and it may have to have a hole in the center, and it may have to be a certain thickness or a weight or a gauss or whatever they rate these things, and they lay them out in a certain configuration, and they're saying those are of benefit if you sleep on top of that. I'm not sure, but what I'm talking about is just the negative effects of electromagnetic radiation and how the body really is an electrical body, so we better be careful on how we use it.
All right.
Well, I'll look into that. Thank you.
Okay,
thank
you're welcome.
You, Toby.
Yep.
And next we have Jeremy from Vancouver.
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, first of all, just a comment and then a question. My comment is I want to let you know I've been listening for a few weeks now, and also listening to a lot of the recordings on the website, and I just really have come to appreciate and trust the things that you talk about and the manner in which you talk about them, you know, that it's really not about a product per se, but about finding solutions. So first off, thank you for that.
Hey, you're welcome.
Yeah, it's pretty rare to find that. But anyhow, as far as the question goes, I want some advice from you about my wife. She just had surgery yesterday. She had a cyst in one of her ovaries that ruptured, and she ended up having about 400 milliliters of blood that was in her abdomen. And so they had a laparoscopic surgery and pulled out, got the blood out and, cauterized it and everything. And so as far as what I can do to help her recover the best and the fastest, I was thinking about, maybe getting her started on some of the enzymes. I've heard you talk about that, and I'm just looking for, what we can do to make this process as quick and help her body, get what it needs to get better quickly.
Well, the number one thing is anytime you have, I'm not saying that surgery isn't important. I've even had a surgical procedure, and when you need it, you need it. However, it's an insult to the body. It's a shock. You're cutting tissue and you're affecting things. In your wife's case, it probably saved her life, and that's a wonderful thing. However, the very first thing that you need to do is hydrate the body to start a detox. So you're drinking more fluid than normal, because most people don't drink enough. We're looking at a minimum of eight-ounce glasses to start the flushing, to start the detoxification. I would go back and look in the archives, and I know Chuck's going to tell you exactly because I can never remember, but there was one about how to do a coffee enema. What does a coffee enema accomplish relative to the gallbladder, the liver, and cleaning out the colon? Chuck, what was that show?
It was June 18th, and there's these big words, fantastic call, with an exclamation mark. It's a third of the way down the page on the conference page.
Okay, so June 18th. And so now you're hydrating the body, you're expediting the detox. You know, every insult, everything that's going on in the body, any medication. Let me tell you, if she had surgery, they probably prepped her, and probably post surgery are loading her up on antibiotics. Is that correct?
They did give her some at the beginning or during the surgery, but she wasn't taking any afterwards.
Okay, so they could have given her, who knows, but it's not uncommon for them to give a massive amount of antibiotics because, hey, they've just cut through the protective mantle of the body, and they're going inside, and they just don't want her getting an infection or a septicemia, a blood infection, or peritonitis or any of these things that could actually kill somebody. So they load them up on antibiotics. Now, the problem with that is that you have, an antibiotic, antibacteria, anti-life form. So they load you up on antibiotics specifically to kill pathogenic bacteria. Antibiotics don't work for viruses and fungus and other organisms like that, but they're pretty good for the bad bacteria. But usually what they do is they give you a broad spectrum antibiotic because they want to just kill a host of different bad bacteria. Unfortunately, antibiotics don't differentiate between bad bacteria and good bacteria. They just kill bacteria, especially the broad spectrum ones. What that means is they're going to go into her body now and start killing off bacteria, the bad and the good. The problem with that is this is where the candida or the fungus now starts to proliferate because the good bacteria that was keeping the fungus in check has been knocked down. This is where you've heard of thrush or you've heard of yeast infections and so on. And so this is real common. Have surgery, load up on antibiotics. Next thing you know, you've got some kind of yeast infection. So then they give you a nice statin or they give you some other drug to kill the fungus. Well, that might work, but then you've got side effects to that. So now all of a sudden her kidneys aren't working too well, so she's got to go and have that checked. So if you want to circumvent all that, you say, all right, I'm going to hydrate the body. I'm going to do coffee enemas as soon as practical. I'm going to take Dr. Miller's Holy Tea, something that goes inside the body to detoxify in addition to the coffee enemas. I'm going to get some probiotics and prebiotics. I'm going to get healthy bacteria back in to her. And they've got it in liquid form and capsule form and all kinds. Go to the health food store. You'll see all the pre and probiotics. I want to make sure that the minerals are there, the enzymes are there. You concentrate on dense nutrition and hydration and detoxification. And her healing will move much quicker when you give her the building blocks. And so now she's gone through the surgery. They probably saved her life because she was bleeding internally. And thank God for that. Now what you need to do is do these other things. Hydrate, detoxify, remineralize, put those probiotics back in there. And then realize this too. All painkillers, if she's had pain or any painkillers, it slows down the peristaltic action of the colon.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that the bowels stay open, and until she can get that healthy bacteria back in there, she may need to do some enemas for a week or two, or depending. Keep the bowels open, because you don't want to get all plugged up and let this, the candida take over, because you don't have enough healthy bacteria. You following me with this?
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, she's really trying to avoid the narcotic pain medicine and hasn't taken any of that. But she has taken the ibuprofen, pretty substantial doses of that as needed to help. But the other thing that they're having her do, just I guess one follow-up with that, she was anemic and has had a tendency to be anemic in the past and definitely was after the surgery. And so they've got her taking a pretty good sized dose of iron. So is there any cautions with that or anything to do
with
help?
Yeah, absolutely don't take that iron. It's not a form that's bioavailable. Typically it's not healthy. It actually is unhealthy. If you've got anemia, I mean, here's a real simple formula for you. You just get 4 ounces of warm water, and you get a half of a lemon, and you squeeze that lemon juice in there, and then you take anywhere from a teaspoon to a tablespoon of blackstrap molasses, which is a bioavailable iron, and you mix that in there and you drink it. You've got a whole food iron supplement that the body actually can thrive on, as opposed to some synthetic iron pill that they would give her. So that's what I would do.
And what that's good to know. I didn't know if there was any alternatives to the ferrous sulfate, but I don't know as far as the dosage or how often or how much, the 4 ounces and half a lemon, but how often
do that once a day. And then here's how this is the common sense and logic approach. Your wife just takes a piece of paper and she writes down symptoms, not relative to her surgery or that. It's that, well, she's always been anemic. Okay, well, relative to her anemia, what symptoms did she have? Oh, she felt kind of weak and she'd get lightheaded, or she'd have this, that, and other thing. She just lists out some symptoms that are related to her anemia. Now you start taking this little blackstrap molasses, the way I've described it, and she does that every day. And after 3 days, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I don't know, she reevaluates and she says, since I've been doing this, I don't have this or this or this symptom anymore. Okay, well, maybe it'd be an advantage to go and just have a blood test to see how your iron's doing there. And you have the blood test and it says, boy, your iron levels are perfect. Okay, now start fading away from that blackstrap molasses. Maybe you've put your body back into balance. You've jump-started it. You've given it enough. And with the proper diet, can't go wrong with eating spinach. Popeye talked about iron and spinach. So you're eating more greens, more vegetables, more fruits. You're drinking better water. In other words, you're doing something to get to a general nutritional approach that will supplement with organic iron, bioavailable iron. And so she now weans herself off of that blackstrap molasses. She takes it. She sees symptoms clearing up. She has a blood test to verify that, hey, the iron levels are back to normal. She starts backing off on blackstrap because she's eating better foods, especially the green leafy stuff. And boom, her anemia is gone forever.
Okay, cool, cool. So even right after the you know, surgery and the blood loss and everything, she wouldn't want to do any bigger dose than just the one, you know.
No.
Like you said.
No, yeah, teaspoon to a tablespoon, you know, it doesn't take much. It really doesn't take much for the body to come around, not only electrically and what we've been talking about tonight, but even relative to nutrition. It really doesn't take a whole lot. You hydrate the body, you detoxify the body, you give it good nutrition. It doesn't really take a whole lot. I always use the example that the guy is laying out, spread out in the middle of the desert, and he's drying out. The sun is baking him, and somebody comes along and says, oh, my gosh, the guy looks like he's dead, but I can tell he's still alive, and he props him up and he gives him a glass of water, just a glass of water, and all of a sudden the guy starts coming back around. You give him another glass of water. You don't want to drown him. You give him another glass of water, and he's sitting up and he's talking and he's thinking again. It's like, wow, I was near death and all you gave me was a couple glasses of water. It's the same thing with oxygen. You're flying in a little Cessna. Everything's fine. You're aware. You're thinking. You're talking. Maybe you got somebody in the plane with you. You have a nice conversation. Now you get your elevation a little too high. The oxygen levels are dropping, and you lose consciousness. I mean, you go all the way to unconscious. And now the plane takes a nosedive and gets you back into some oxygen, and you wake up. Didn't take a whole lot. Just took a little and boom, the body responds. It's the same thing with nutrition. So just try doing these things I've suggested and watch what happens.
Absolutely. Well, I will do. Yeah, I just didn't know if this was the time to start the enzymes, or it sounded like from what you had said before, maybe it would be a good idea.
Yeah. You need enzymes, and you need, especially after surgery, you know, if you don't want to have scar tissue, and adhesion is fibers are real. They're doing laparoscopic now because it's you have less of the adhesion is fibers, less exposure to internal organs and glands and muscle and tissue and all that. So, but even then, even with that little incision, you know, you want to cut. You don't want to have the adhesion is fibers. You don't want to have any of these other things. So you better have a good complement of enzymes, and enzymes help negate that reaction with the adhesion of scar tissue and such. And then you need minerals. You need good nutrition, and you need to supplement. You need to hydrate, and you need to detoxify, and you need to replenish, especially if you're taking medication. You better be doing something for the healthy bacteria, or else the fungus is going to go crazy. So if you just, you know, common sense and logic, do a few of these things. Anemia, blackstrap has been used forever. It's a whole mineral complex, incidentally, and it's healthy for us, especially when you do it the way I'm talking about. And boom, she's just healthy, and hopefully you maintain the health where she never gets another cyst. You know, a cyst is an expression. It's a signal. Something's out of balance. Something's toxic. This isn't normal. So now I've got this. Okay, just get yourself back into optimal health and longevity, and there won't be another cyst. It's over with, and she'll never get another one. Okay?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you, Jeremy. Gene from Houston.
Yes. I have a friend that sells magnetic mattresses, and I was wondering just what you've thought about those.
Well, I talked about that a couple calls back, and because there was a question about the difference between a solid magnet and electromagnetic radiation, and I said that there are blankets and mattresses and other systems where they use magnets. Even my wife carries around a little water bottle, and taped to the bottle, she puts this magnet. because she read somewhere that it had something to do with the polarity and the charge and all this. And so I'm not thoroughly convinced of all these things. I haven't really done any research on it to comment. I would just say that there must be some evidence out there that is indicating that some of these magnetic mattresses or blankets or whatever have a benefit enough to warrant its use. So what I would say is especially with the advent of the Internet, go ahead and if you have access to the Internet, do a little search on it and find out for yourself. I definitely would do a pretty deep search if you're looking at something that is expensive. If you're talking, you know, $20-$30, that's one thing. But if you're looking at $500 or $600 to $1,000, I think I'd be doing some pretty serious research on it first.
Well, I bought a mattress.
Okay.
And used it for a week. And I gave it to my daughter because I just did not like it.
Well, here again, you know, it very well could be the same thing relative to I talked about before, where Mrs. Smith across the street starts taking flaxseed oil, and it just really helps her with her arthritis. And so she tells Mr. Jones across the street, boy, I know you've got arthritis, you should try it. He tries the flaxseed oil, and it doesn't do anything for him. Matter of fact, it makes it even worse. Well, why is that? Well, it's because Mrs. Smith may have been demonstrating a deficiency in the essential fatty acids, and flaxseed oil addressed her deficiency. But the other guy, he didn't have that deficiency. He's got something else going on. So somebody uses the magnets and they say, oh my gosh, it's changed my life. It's fantastic. Someone else uses it like yourself and it didn't do anything. You really didn't like it, so you give it away. This is the way the body works. There isn't any one thing that works for everyone. And so we just have to kind of work our way through things. And so you were probably doing the right thing by getting rid of it if you felt that it wasn't doing you any good.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Jean. Deborah from Kentucky.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Dr. Jim, I believe it was last week that you mentioned baking soda and maple syrup, and I wanted you to clarify a little bit. I've seen a recipe where you're supposed to warm it up and mix it and then let it cool down, and then it's kind of like this thick glop. And so I didn't know if that was the way that you do it or if you do it a different way, because I would like to get back to that.
Well, it you know, if you have, let's just say that you have 4 ounces of water, and I'm just going to say distilled water because I know that then we're just dealing with pure water here. If you have 4 ounces of distilled water and you put some baking soda in that, and then you want to take maple syrup, the consistency of maple syrup, unless that water is really, really cold, your house is cold, the water is cold, then you may need to warm up the water a little bit so it disperses the maple syrup within the water. Definitely blackstrap molasses is so thick, you definitely want to warm up the water if you don't want a big clump of blackstrap at the bottom of the glass. But if the water is, let's say, room temperature and it's warm enough and you put that maple syrup in there and you see that it's dispersed nicely, you don't need to warm up the water. You just put the maple syrup in the water, you put the baking soda in there, sodium bicarbonate. You don't want to have the typical baking soda. There's aluminum in there. You don't want that. Go to the health food store and get the, I think it's called, I want to call it Reds, but Chuck, do you know what I'm talking about?
No, but they ought to look at the ingredients and make sure there's not aluminum.
Okay, well, there's a main supplier in the United States. I'm just going to say Reds, but I'm not sure. But you go to the health food store, you get the good sodium bicarbonate, and you just mix it up. Now, if the maple syrup isn't dispersing, it's a big clump, you're going to have to warm up the water. It's kind of that simple.
And for those listening tonight, Jim, that weren't here last week, or maybe they're listening to a recording of this, I don't recall myself, the maple syrup and baking soda, what was that for?
Well, you're trying to rapidly alkalize the body.
Okay.
The best way to alkalize the body is to eat alkaline food. I mean, the vegetables are definitely alkalizing, green vegetables, fruits are alkalizing. Basically, here's what I tell everybody, fruits and vegetables, for the most part, are alkalizing. And for the most part, everything else is acid. So your bread is acid, grains, the cereals, protein, these things cause an acid condition in the body. You want to alkalize the body? You can easily do that by eating more fruits and more vegetables. If you want to rapidly alkalize the body, you can use a little sodium bicarbonate with the maple syrup in the water, and that'll help you to alkalize the body. But you want to make sure, you know, everything's in balance. Keep thinking of your body as a grandfather clock. And you have this tick-tock going on. The pendulum moves to the right and it moves to the left. And as it does that, it creates harmony. It creates balance. If that pendulum gets stuck on the right, the clock quits working. So you don't want to be 14 on a pH scale. You don't want to be so alkaline. I mean, 14 will burn you. What you want is 7 is neutral. Lean a little bit over 7, 7.2, 7.4, 7. Maybe even an 8. You get over to that side, you're an alkaline. So you're testing your urine, testing your saliva, and you'll know when you're alkaline. The first thing that happens when you become alkaline is you have more energy. You have better oxygen saturation. I said that earlier. You're going to have that negative millivolt going on in the body. So you're also going to know when you're acid. You'll have less energy. You'll have more tissue hypoxia. You'll see that in your face and your lips, your gums. And you're going to be acid. You're going to be acid. Your millivolts are going to be on the plus side as opposed to the minus side. It's real simple. So if you're going to do this sodium bicarbonate and the maple syrup and the water, I would be testing your urine saliva every morning. Make sure that you're not getting up to 10 and 11 and 12 and 13. You don't want to get out of balance either. You got it?
Dr. Jim, did you have a proportion of maple syrup to baking soda, like for one time that you're drinking it?
Well, you have a teaspoon, let's say, of the maple syrup and a teaspoon of the sodium bicarbonate and 4 ounces of water. And then you always adjust. You know, no two people are the same. So you say, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do that every day, and I'm going to test my urine and saliva every day, and I'm going to see what happens. And as you find that dose is working for you. Now, remember, this is just to jumpstart the body. You don't want to be taking sodium bicarbonate every day the rest of your life. You
should be able,
you know, you should be getting the alkalinity in the water you drink and in the foods that you eat. So the fruits and vegetables, one indicator that you're not eating enough vegetables and not enough fruits is an acid pH. It's really, now watch this. I said for the most part. Why? Because one thing that makes us acid is sugar. And not only refined sugars, but starch converted sugars, which means what? You eat a baked potato and you get all this starch going, or you eat corn, which is sweet anyway, and it's got starch, and you can create an acid in the body by eating too much starch. So if you like baked potato, the center of the potatoes where most of the starch is, just take a tablespoon and cut the center. You know, you bake the potato, you're ready for it, cut into the center and take the center portion out where most of the starch converted sugars are going to be, and then you can have that rest of the potato up against the skin there, and now you get your potato, but you're not getting quite as much starch because starches are converted into sugars and sugar creates acid. So for the most part, vegetables will create alkalinity, but just realize there's some vegetables that are really starchy, and they'll make sugar, and that sugar will make you acid, okay?
I wanted to thank you for this evening's call. It's one of the most exciting pieces of education for our Foundation of Our Health that I've ever heard. And I have one other quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a strong advocate of proper food combining, like primarily most of the time not combining starch like potato with your meat?
Well, yeah, the word that I heard was the strong. Here's what I'm really strong on. I'm really strong on what's working for the individual. I think I said this on one of these calls. In the 70s, I was in San Francisco at a conference, and they flew in this doctor from Japan with, his patient. But the patient was never sick. It was just the doctor was validating the patient's lifestyle. And so two of these Japanese men appeared at the conference, and the doctor signed an affidavit that said in the 35 or 40 years that he knew this man standing next to him, that man only had one cup of spirulina a day for 40 years. He drank water and one cup of spirulina a day. And the guy took his shirt off. He was like 60 years old. He looked like Bruce Lee. I mean, he was chiseled, his muscles, he just looked unbelievable. And all he had was a cup of spirulina, and then he drank water, and that was it for 40 years, as the doctor testified. Now, I look at that and I think, proper food combining. No two people are the same. So some people, eating the potatoes and eating the meat, it's just not healthy, and it's just not going to work for them. Other people say, like an 87, 88-year-old gentleman I had as a patient, where he said, look, I eat meat. I eat potatoes. I don't like salad. And I drink 3 shots of whiskey a day. I'm 88 years old. I want you to check me out. Well, the guy, I don't know. I don't know what happened to him, but all I know is the guy was like in perfect health. Blood pressure perfect, everything. This guy could run around the block, and he's 88 years old. Or you look at a guy like George Burns that lived to 105 or whatever, and he would drink and smoke cigars all the time. I mean, so the bottom line is that I would say that the human being typically thrives when you eat food in season in your area, and you're rotating your diet just as crops are rotated. So when all people had was maybe some meat and potatoes, when they kind of genetically got used to eating that way, most of those people did all right. But you pull people into different areas and you change their lifestyle and change their diet, sometimes they don't do all right. So I would say that, you know, if you primarily eat fruits and vegetables, nuts, seeds, sprouts, legumes, free-range chicken, turkey, free-range beef, wild Alaskan salmon, if you eat things like that, and then you decide how well your combining is working for you. And you do that by your signs and signals and symptoms. How are you feeling when you wake up? Are you sleeping well at night? Do you wake up energized? Do you have energy during the day? Are you thinking clearly? If you're doing that on your diet, whatever it is, then I would say that's right for you. But it may not be right for everyone else. So everyone has to be tuned into their own body. And there's too many people, doctor types especially, that have written books on this is the way your diet should be. And I tend to kind of go back to the primitive look at it. And that is, wait, no two people are the same. Some people can't handle a lot of protein. Some people, according to Dr. William Donald Kelly, who helped develop the metabolic type testing back in the 70s, you know, you've got people that are absolute vegetarian metabolism, other ones carnivores, other ones mixed, and then divisions of different levels therein. So that's kind of my position on it.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Deborah. Mm-hmm. Jim, we have one more caller, but before we take them, oh, there's somebody else that's added their name to the list. Bob's Red Mill is what
that's
you're
it.
Looking for. Yeah,
yep.
Lori Grogan in customer service must have Googled it for us. She instant messaged that to me. Thank you, Lori. And Coral Complex 3, there's buffering minerals in there. That's another thing that a person can use for
yep.
helping mm-hmm. to alkalize the body. I want to make sure
yep.
to mention that. And, my goodness, I think I forgot my third point.
Well, it's time to hydrate your body.
It'll come to me.
Yeah, sure it will.
And it was important too, Jim. Well, let's listen to Dorothy from Iowa. Dorothy, go ahead.
Hello there, Chuck and Dr. Jim.
Hello there.
This is very interesting. Last night, or early this morning, at 3:30 this morning, I am listening to the recorded call on the enemas. And, wow, Dr. Jim, that is awesome. That I've heard about enemas, but nothing like this. I am sold. I am going to go out and get me the paraphernalia. I threw it away when I moved. I mean, you know. And my question for you is, several of them, actually, but this one here is, after hearing that, I'm saying, okay, now you know a little bit of my history. I've detoxed for months here since July, and I'm concerned about, is there such a thing as me detoxing too fast by doing the enemas? I heard you saying one-third of the bag, and then, you know, doing the left to middle to right. That's my first question to you.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be concerned with giving yourself an enema. Is not going to be too fast of a detox. All you're doing is putting water in there, and you're evacuating the water, and it's just a real simple procedure. What I would be concerned with is if somebody says, boy, I gave myself an enema, and I felt so fantastic that I started doing 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 enemas a day. That would be a problem, but no. The way you're describing it is fine. What's your next question?
That's good to know. Okay. And then you got into the body and the electricity of the body.
Yep.
That is pretty awesome. I have been aware in my past, you've heard me say about the car accidents I've had when I lived in Houston, the chiropractors, they tried to use a TENS unit on me. They did ultrasound, and they would just barely do these things, and my electrical system went crazy. I couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.